Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Life-Changing Moment in a Post Office. Before we get to the fentanyl overdoses and the Thurston County Jail, and I tell you all about how I know drugs get into prison, which I have a inside information on how this is done.
Inside being the key word here.
Inside, exactly. Yeah. Very good. Turn of phrase there, Spike.
Thank you.
So, Spike, before we get into all that, you said you had a life-changing moment. You had an epiphany at the post office the other day.
You know, I was given a gift at the post office. I really was, and I... The last hour or so, I've kind of flown off the deep end. I've short fused it a few times with you, and I apologize there.
How dare you?
And you know, when we talk about things that are really important to me about what, the integrity of the information we feed the public, the our right to body autonomy and the right to life and pro life and all those things, I get very very passionate about it, and I apologize. I tend to just bull in a china shop a lot of times, and I my goal is to be better at not doing that, to be respectful and empathetic, and you know, I've got two ears and one mouth, my old man used to tell me all the time, for a reason. but something happened to me yesterday at the post office that really opened my eyes, and I completely forgot it in just one day.
Yesterday
morning, before we got on the air here, I was running errands. I told you my wife's out of town. I've got all this. My wife gives me this honey-do list. Like, I've got a team of 20 workers to get things done. One of the things was mailing off a present to a friend who lives overseas, a birthday present. Someone's, you know, far away from home, all by themselves. It was important that I get this thing out in the mail. So I go to the post office, and I'm in line at the post office, and post offices are horrifically understaffed. I mean, everywhere you go, they're trying to hire for every position. There's three windows and one worker at the post office. But there's not a big line, so I'm like, okay, I got time for this. I can do this. And I've, you know, as all things, I've cut my schedule way too close. and the little lady in front of me, who's, you know, 4'3" on her best day and probably pushing 70 few, if not 80 couple, okay, has three packages. These packages are going to three different countries for international shipping.
Oh no!
Oh yeah, and the gentleman working the, and I'm like, you know, the wheels in my head are spinning. I'm thinking, oh my God, no, why now? Why me? Why now? Why you? And this gentleman at the post office, the postal employee, was diligently making sure the address is, how do I spell Sri Lanka? How do I spell, you know, I mean, seriously. And ma'am, you know, I'm a little bit worried about this package. Let me tape this up. He's retaping the three different packages for her.
Oh,
he's typing with not two fingers, one finger, you know, to do this. And I'm sitting there and I'm getting steamed and I'm going to be late. And I looked at this little lady and how fragile she was and how, you know, this isn't her game. She's not a shipping company. She doesn't know how to do this. She doesn't know customs forms. This guy was so patient with her, so kind with her, so attentive to and making sure that she, you know, she was sure and confident and reassured that her packages were going to get where they were going and they were going to be safely packed up and taped and the addresses were correct. She could count on the U.S. Postal Service. And as I'm sitting there watching this guy deal with this elderly lady, I thought to myself, that's how it's supposed to be done. That's what's important. My schedule, you know, it doesn't matter. My time doesn't matter. It matters, but not anywhere near the level of humanity that this gentleman just dealt with this senior, who's probably seen more in her life than I could ever begin to dream. This, for all I know, this lady came here on a boat or whatever. You know, the acceptance speech from the Oscars. I was in a camp. Or I don't know what she'd been through. And it doesn't matter the way he treated this lady, but the respect and the courtesy and professionalism, I'm thinking that's what matters.
And then one day later, all of a sudden my
schedule didn't matter. My stress factor was disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, and he took care of business and he got it done. And I got up there and he got my package done and I got to work. No problem. The road rage wasn't there. The stress factor wasn't there. I was given this gift of what's important and what's not important. And when we talk about issues that we are passionate about, that we have disagreements about, that we have opposing views about, what matters is how we talk to each other. What matters is the fact that we listen, which I so quickly forgot to do, to opposing views.
Right.
Respectfully, because my opinion is just that, my opinion, and no more valuable than anybody else's. I try to come at issues with a level of understanding, a level of knowledge, research. I do read as much as I can about the topics we choose to bring to the audience. Sometimes I just forget it and just run full through with what my heart says.
I think everybody does. I think everybody does that, man. I think because we live in such a period where people feel as if they're not being listened to.
Yeah.
People often feel as if they need to get as much out as they can. People are so, you know, if you look at people's biggest pet peeves, top of the list being interrupted, right? I mean, most people are so desperate to be heard, and rightfully so, that I think that we sometimes forget that we have time and space to talk about all of these things. So, for instance, Spike O'Neill, fentanyl is a very contentious issue, right? It is a very difficult issue to talk about. You talk about drug addiction. You talk about childhood trauma. You talk about all the things that factor into this. And it looks like in King County, fentanyl overdoses is on the rise. In 2022, fentanyl was responsible for the deaths of 708 people. Jeez. That's an average of about 1.94 a day. As of March 14th, fentanyl has already killed 167 people in King County. That's an average of 2.29 a day. That's really bad. That's really rough. It's also really sad because when I think about these drug addicts who die, I don't know if it's just my bias because I stopped using heroin so many years ago and I only did fentanyl a couple of times. That's for everybody's bingo card out there if you're doing the wheeljack time talk about drugs. Bingo.
Yeah, who had hour two? Oh, way so, to bet the long shot.
But when I read about these people who OD and die, I have a lot of sympathy for the child that they were and the damage that they likely went through. Now, you hold the adult responsible for their actions, right? I think this is an important distinction for people to make. You hold adults accountable, but we have sympathy for the child that they once were. And we understand that the traumas that they went to resulted in this kind of individual. So why are there fentanyl overdoses going up all around the country? A lot of people would say they would go with the very utilitarian side of it, and they would say, well, it's the supply. It's because there's a supply coming in. You've got illegal immigrants flooding over the border with fentanyl, and that's how we're going to solve this problem, or that's the most important step. And then you've got other people who might say, well, this is a moral failing on the part of these people, and it's a character deficit on the part of these people. And you have other people who might say, well, this is the disease of addiction, right? But when I think about why these rates of drug addiction and crime are going up, I think it's because there is a message out there that in the United States, no matter what you do, you will never get ahead. No matter how hard you try, no matter how much effort you put into anything. I'm not saying it applies to everybody. There's a certain amount of nihilism out there. And I think it's an overarching nihilism, Spike, and let me know what you think about this. When people think about the job market or, oh, I got to get my BA or I have to get my college degree and I'll never get that. And, you know, it's so hard to find a place to live around here and climate change, quote unquote, is ruining this country. It's going to, why would I even care? And there's statistics out there that say that shouldn't have kids anymore, that we should just stop reproducing. There is so much messaging out there that is so negative for so many people. Who are already dealing with deep-seated childhood traumas, bad mom, bad dad, maybe they're foster kids, maybe they're runaways or whatever it is. All of this creates the perfect conditions for someone to seek a coping mechanism, i.e. hard drugs, opiates, fentanyl, in order to deal with it, right? So I think that you could try to stop fentanyl from coming over the border. But I think, and this is just a theory that I have, I think the most effective way to get people to stop using fentanyl is you got to start at the beginning, right, where you raise kids, where the idea of doing drugs is repulsive to them. Obviously, not all drugs, but hard drugs, right? The idea of doing street drugs is repulsive to them. And you raise them in such a condition where they don't want to do those things and they don't seek them out. And what you do with the people that are already affected by it is you have to go back and you have to treat that damaged child that lives inside of them. I just don't see how you can put these people in prison and expect them to come out fully rehabilitated. And this is something that I talk about often.
Well, right? This is one of those rare moments when everybody in this argument is right. Everybody has an element of their perspective. Let me flesh this out. Is there a drug issue at the border? Absolutely. It's not drug mules carrying these things through the desert at 200 pounds a 9-year-old. It's the cartels flooding this country with fentanyl. We're being targeted by a criminal organization because we are the market. And fentanyl is a cheaper and more deadly product to make. So, I hate to agree with somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene, but it's time to really declare war on drug cartels because they have been given carte blanche to declare war on us. So that element of it, I agree with. It's not a border wall. It's not the issue. A border wall is not going to do any good. But stopping the cartels from targeting Americans is part of it. But also part of it is, you know, people who used to have drug, you know, recreational drug use are now finding themselves getting drugs that are laced with fentanyl. Some of these some of these ODs are purely accidental ODs. I know dear friends who've lost children who thought they were taking a pill from mom's cabinet or whatever at a party, and it was some, you know, nefariously bogus piece of pill that had fentanyl laced into it.
They call it a hot pill.
But that's what it is. That element is also correct. But I think you're right about the underlying root of the sense of hopelessness that people feel. And they used to just turn to liquor, which is dangerous and can be abused and end lives, but not at this rate.
Right. Or they'd go to church or they'd go to bowling or what, you know,
they
had other things to attract them to. Right. But now what do people have? I just don't think there is messaging enough in the United States that there is an optimistic future for you. And I don't care if you're on the right or on the left, right? If you're on the left, it's, you know, the oppressive capitalist matrix that's coming down on you, or at least that's the narrative that you tell yourself. And if you're on the right, it's the oppressive communist matrix that's coming down on you. You know what I mean? It's
like we've all got an enemy. Yeah.
There's this constant enemy mindset out there with fellow Americans. And I think that that leads a lot of these people to, when they become young adults, they think to themselves, I'm just going to check out. There's no reason why I should be working for $15 an hour when I can just live on the streets. And I think that it's a failure of societal messaging as a whole to try to tell these people that their life has value and it has meaning and that their contributions to society can be beautiful and wonderful. Like Mike Lindell.
My kid thinks she'll never be able to buy a home.
Right, exactly. That's,
and she's doing great. She works hard. She's got a very comfortable life in her apartment with her guy and their two pups. But she's like, how am I ever going to buy a house? How am I ever going to build anything? You know, we'll be living in an apartment because we can never buy in this city. I don't want to move out to wherever, so in the way small suburbs, rural America, to be able to own a home. She likes being in the city. She likes living a city life. She's young. You know, she enjoys going to shows. She enjoys her job in a service industry. She's a bartender. She makes good money. But that sense of hopelessness, I mean, it hasn't driven her to drug abuse or alcohol abuse, but that sense of hopelessness permeates every element in society.
Yeah.
And we decimated the middle class. I think it basically falls into the inequity of wealth that has the equity gap has just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse over the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you have examples of people who are living these really extravagant lifestyles, and I think that there's a lot of people out there that say, I will never have that. I'll never obtain that.
So yeah, social media. I'll never be a Kardashian. I'll never be an influencer.
Right. And so I think that this other story is linked, though. It says one dead, one in critical condition after six overdoses on fentanyl at the Thurston County Jail. This is from the Seattle Times. And so, Spike, I told you in the pre-show meeting that there's a lot of questions out there about, well, how do these drugs actually get into prison? You'd think it would be very difficult. Well, I happen to know a guy who I won't mention his name, but he had to go to prison over some warrants that he had. He was already a drug addict. And whilst he was in prison, he made a deal with the white supremacists that kind of brought him into their little, you know, prison gang.
Community of safety.
Right. And so he agreed with this crime network to be a mule for these guys.
Wow.
And so what he would do is when he would get out, he would commit another crime and then he would get rearrested and then he would go back in and he would bring in these drugs. Now, how he would do that is you take a paper towel roll, like, you know, the cardboard roll, and then you put a garbage bag inside of it. And then as a kind of a mold, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then you load that up with drugs until it's, you know, as tight as it possibly can be. And then you tie off the loose end of it, take it out, cut off the excess garbage bag, take off the cardboard roll, put tape around it, like surgical tape or something. And then you ingest it.
Does it come in through the front door of the store or up through the back for delivery entrance?
Either one works. And you ingest it. And then that is how you get this. Now, the craziest part. Right. Now, the craziest part about this is that the you would say, well, how do you get it out if you ingest it? There's a string that you hold in the back of your mouth, right at the base of your tongue, and you practice this, and you practice rolling it forward and then pulling it out. Can you believe that? Can you? And he did this several times over the course of his servitude to this particular white supremacy gang. And he would, and every time he had to go and do it, they would ask for things like tobacco, or they would ask for things like heroin, or they would ask for things like cocaine. So he would have this little package inside of his tummy or elsewhere, just waiting to get sent to prison, and then he would go and he'd pop it out, and then, you know.
And that was his viable business model, was to be reincarcerated repeatedly as an ongoing drug mule.
That, but also he was indebted to them the first time that he was in prison with these guys.
And he wasn't assaulted in prison. And he was under the protective wing of that white supremacist group.
So he owed them a lot of money, and he owed them a lot of time. And so that was the bargain that he made with them. So he would get popped on a misdemeanor, and he was on probation. So he would go back and he would do 30 days or whatever it was. He would get let go, 15 days good behavior in the fine state of California. And then he would wait a couple of weeks, and then he would do it again. And he did it again and again and again and again and again.
And back to the original point about fentanyl coming over the borders and being put into what's called hot pills. I guarantee you, well, I can assume the folks who OD or die in prison probably didn't. Do you think they knew what they were doing and just went too far? Do you think they got...
They probably got, I mean, it's if you press a pill hot, which is, you know, you call that in the streets, it's hot press. And if you press a pill like that, most people can't tell. It looks like Vicodin.
Right.
You know what I mean? It looks like a generic hydrocodone. It looks like generic Xanax.
Something you've played with safely in the past and think you know you have control over.
Right. And so what these guys do is they go and they buy pill presses, which you can find on international markets, and then you get it shipped to your house. And it just looks like almost like a cookie cutter, if that makes sense. It looks like a mechanical press.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where when you have a lever, and so you put the powder into the mold, and you press it down, and then you take it out, and the pill is in it. It looks like generic Xanax. It looks like generic Valium, but it is in fact not. And so, I actually, when I was in college, there was this kid. Get this. There was this kid who was pressing in the dorms. And I found out about it, and I tried to level with the kid, and I talked to him, and I was like, listen, my dude, let me tell you something. I have been a drug addict for many years, and I was still a drug addict at the time, right? So I go, listen, this is the worst thing that you can do with your life. You got to throw this thing away. You got to stop having powder shipped to you at this college. You are going to get felony after felony after felony. It's going to ruin your life, bro. You got to get away from this. And you know what he did, Spike? He didn't listen to me. And
he cut you off from his...
No, he didn't listen to me. And he kept doing it. And I said, I will not... At the time, I was like 26 or 27. I turned him in. I flat out turned him in. I went right to Campus PD and I said, listen, there's a kid. He's pressing pills. This is his dorm room. I didn't care because he was putting other people's lives at risk. And even though I was a derelict drug addict at the time... I knew that this was going to be nothing but trouble to have some 19-year-old kid. And most people would say, well, Jack, you're snitching on that kid. How could you do that? In my mind, if that kid went and he did 3 years or whatever, and I could save I don't know how many lives on that campus, it was well worth it. Maybe even his life. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He was the most irresponsible kid I'd ever met in my life. I tried to help him. I tried to save him, Spike O'Neill, but he didn't listen to me.
My knowledge about drugs were in prison were from Red in Shawshank Redemption. You bribe your guard, you brought in a pillowcase full of Luckies and a poster of Rita Hayworth.
Yeah. So when we get back, we'll take a really quick break. And there is a new bill coming out of a state that I don't even really want to talk about. But it does raise an interesting question as to whether or not we should ban a certain kind of punishment nationwide. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Philosophic question that I have debated every year that I've been in radio, I have had this debate with somebody. Back when I was doing call-in radio, this was the most hot of hot topics. People could not stand my opinion on this for some strange and odd reason. should you be allowed to strike a child? Should you be allowed to use corporal punishment on a child, given that we have, 50 or 60 years worth of data that suggests that this is probably the worst thing that you can do to a developing mind? Should you be able to do it, and should it be legal? Well, there's a bill that would outlaw teachers hitting kids with disabilities in Oklahoma. And you would have imagined that that would have been a no-brainer, that people would have said, well, I may want to use corporal punishment on my own kids, but kids with disabilities in schools, now that's crossing the line.
Yeah, that is just a bridge too far.
It failed. Yeah, it failed. Apparently, people in the fine state of Oklahoma wants teachers to be able to strike children with disabilities. Now, before we kind of dig into the nuts and the bolts of it, Spike, if you go and you read any of the literature on corporal punishment in children, it's all pretty consistent. If you decide to strike your child for behavior that you don't like, what you will see is a dramatic drop in that behavior for 7 to 14 days. And then that behavior will rebound again, meaning that it will be worse than the first time, right? And the problem with hitting a child or striking a child is you're actually hampering their neurodevelopment. So they're not able to build skills like empathy or understanding or listening skills, because they are now constantly under the idea that they will be terrorized if they make a mistake. Now, don't take my word for it. You can go read. There's lots of great literature out there. There's lots of great books about how to peacefully parent your child or have good boundaries with your child. But there is not a single piece of evidence that is anybody that you could provide to me which would suggest that striking your children is somehow effective. A lot of people have anecdotal evidence, Spike, but in terms of the long-term health of children, all of the peer-reviewed scientific data doesn't look good. Shouldn't be hitting your kids. Spanking, striking of any kind is not good. Now, for some reason, this is controversial in 2023. I don't know why, but it's always been my hottest of hot takes. Spike, don't hit your kids.
Well, it explains a lot to me why I can't be empathetic, why I can't keep my mouth shut, because I was, corporal punished within my life, most of my young life.
And that's so sad.
Well, I would be the first guy to tell you that I deserved every lick I got, and it helped steer me toward, actions having consequences as a rule of life.
Okay.
So, I mean, and I will say that and then follow it with, I've never struck my kids.
Right, exactly.
Never.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I lie. One time, my older got me so hot, I swatted her bottom as I was throwing her out of the house with a with a trash bag full of her stuff, because she wasn't leaving with my – that was her stuff, but she wasn't leaving with my suitcase.
Right, okay.
And once, just once. And, I mean, the evidence is there, but when you get to, I don't want to be rude. The Oklahoma legislature are quoting biblical verses left, right, and center. God's word is higher than all the so-called experts combined.
Yes.
Says Representative Jim Olson. And how can people ignore? Because they look at back at a time in their lives when things were better. And,
right.
And what was the difference? We disciplined our kids. We prayed in school. They want to dismiss all the other elements in life that contribute to a kid's growth, behavior, misbehavior. All the things we've been talking about for the last couple hours, about lack of opportunity, about outside stress, about a sense of hopelessness, about violence in our entertainment systems, whether it's games or movies or whatever.
Yeah.
They want to ignore all that and put it all in the Bible. Trust God.
Well, and also, if you want to make a little drug addict, the number one, the most common theme between all hardcore drug addicts is bad mom, bad dad, meaning, using corporal punishment on them. You go and look at any kind of documentary on anybody who is living with drug addiction or struggling with drug addiction, almost always they come from households of physical abuse. And this includes things like spanking. I know that we like to use euphemisms in this way, but think about it like this, Mike. Why do we not condone as a society when your spouse is not listening to you and they're not doing what you say? Why do we not condone domestic violence? Why don't we condone it between two adults? We don't like it. Nobody likes it. Everybody says, oh man, you hit your wife. Oh man, you hit your husband. Why do you have to do that? That's so awful. Everybody's in agreement with that, right? For the most part.
Well, I would hope.
Why then as a society are we complicit with the same action for a child, someone with diminished capacity, right? Someone who lacks the ability to retain long-term information until they're about 6 or 7 years old. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. I think what it largely is, Spike, is it's lazy parenting.
Oh, I was about to say, Jack, right. There was a story from Arkansas 2 months ago.
Yeah.
A school board, actually a town council, city council actually voted to allow teachers to bring corporal punishment back into schools because parents and were quoted at meetings saying, I don't know what to do with them. I don't have the time to deal with this. You guys deal with this.
Yeah, and I think it's sad to me that in many ways we're regressing in our understanding. Like, you know, who was that football player that got arrested for having his dogs fight? Do you remember this?
Michael Vick.
Okay. This guy was having his dogs, you know, fight in dog fighting pits, and there was footage released of Michael Vick striking these dogs and trying to, you know, coach these dogs up to make them more aggressive. And what is he doing? He's striking them, he's hitting them, he's shocking them. Everybody was horrified by that. But at the same time, and I'm sure if I went to anybody in Oklahoma and anybody in this legislature, and I went to those fine people and I showed them those images of Michael Vick beating his dogs, they would say, that's awful. I can't believe that a man would do that. But then in the same breath, they would say, I still think that children need discipline. Do you know what I mean? That is the level of cognitive dissonance that people have to have around this issue. And then they wonder why drug addiction is through the roof. Depression rates are through the roof. I mean, America has the highest percentage of corporal punishment of any country in the world outside of China. Do you know what I mean?
And
everybody goes, well, look how great China is doing. China has the highest rate of suicide in the world. So I there is a weird cognitive dissonance that people have around their relationship to their children and how they should be disciplining their children. And for some people, for some reason, people want to rely on the wooden spoon or the ruler or the back of the hand or whatever it is to try to quote unquote teach their child how to respect them without using their words. I thought we were adults, Spike. I thought we were bigger and stronger and more wise, and we could outwit a 5-year-old without resorting to violence. But I guess there are many people out there that feel like they can't do that.
Well, here's the point I was going to make, was that there's no training course required for parenting. You know, all we know is the baggage we bring from our youth. And most people who feel that, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, that's where they came from. That's all they know.
Civil War has erupted at one Fox News network after the 2020 election. Now, Spike, a lot of people accuse me of being, say, unfair to Fox News. You know what I mean? A lot of people accuse me of maybe being a little, unkind, maybe? A little uncharitable, bad faith, some people might say. But when I watch a lot of Fox News, and when I listen to these people whine and cry about how they're so censored, even though they're the most popular news channel on cable TV by far, when I have to listen to these people talk about how they're censored for their political beliefs, even though the largest YouTube channel out there, political YouTube channel out there, is Steven Crowder. He's got 5-6 million subscribers on YouTube. The Daily Wire combined has something like 10 million subscribers. I mean, these are above and beyond the most popular.
Peel away.
Yeah.
In private notes to one another, Fox's top stars spat fire at the reporting colleagues who debunked Trump's claims of election fraud, even as they gave those allegations no credence. We're officially working for an organization that hates us, said primetime host Laura Ingraham.
Some people who are saying, I am in this organization to give people legitimate news. And then you have other people who are saying, if we do that, we will lose our standing. We'll lose our ranking as the number one viewed news channel on cable. Right. So, I mean,
exactly.
I think Carlson brings in, what is it, like 20 million concurrent viewers every night? I mean, his numbers are insane, right?
His numbers or his viewers? Oh, his numbers are insane. I apologize.
Right.
That was a cheap joke, and I apologize. I apologize. But when Tucker Carlson himself is admitting that these guests they have on, these conspiracy theories that they promote are ridiculous, insane, and troubling, and they can't wait to get past this story. You know, I've seen this meme online, and I hate to use memes as examples, but it really does sum up the whole situation. Fox News, we're lying to you. Fox News viewer, no, you're not. they are.
Yeah, in this case, I think might bring down. It might not, but in my mind, it might.
It was featured on John Schoen. Was featured. Jason did a piece on it. Jason Rance did a piece on it about a teacher who was talking to his class about this story, about how Fox News had been exposed for promoting misinformation due to the profit margin as opposed to the integrity of a news organization. And the teacher was filmed surreptitiously by one of his students at a parental request, saying, "Why are you talking about politics in school?" You know, like real gotcha moment. But I think the teacher was talking about the integrity of the news industry.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to talking about politics. And that's the crux of this story. The integrity of the news industry doesn't matter to their audience. That's not what they want. They want to be entertained and have their positions reaffirmed. There's a comfort in that. And if that's what their audience wants, it behooves Fox to deliver that to them. But let's quit pretending that it's fair, balanced, or a news organization. If they admit the fact that, look, we're going to give our audience what they want. We're a business here for profit. That's what for-profit businesses do. They give the audience what they want.